Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great. That's actually a lie. I don't feel that good. But happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. YouTube, hi, hello, welcome back. Hit the like button and the bell and subscribe and comment. We appreciate y'all. Nikias, very fun basketball week. The finals are here. The W continues to roll on. It is time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. Also want to send my appreciations to the YouTube comment section. Appreciation to you, Steve, for one, being here like you always are, but also pushing through, not feeling well. Hope you feel better, big dog. We are going to do the best that we can, but lots of hoop to get into. The finals are here. As you said, the W continues to roll on. The conversation around the W continues to roll on, which is a positive and a negative in some cases, but we will leave that where it's at. We are going to kick things off with an NBA Finals preview. We have the Boston Celtics, who have pretty much been wire to wire the best team in the NBA this year. We have the Dallas Mavericks, who are also good, remade their team at the trade deadline, got even better, and now they have knocked off three straight 50-win teams, two top five offenses, Western Conference Finals matchup against the best defense in the NBA, in which they just lit them up in game five and had like a 150 offensive rating in the half court before halftime, which is not supposed to happen. Luka Doncic had his best pick and roll outing of the postseason in game five. And now we have this. Best slash deepest roster in the NBA, headlined by an all-NBA first team talent in Jason Tatum. Another all-NBA caliber talent in Jaylen Brown, who didn't make it this year, made it last year. And you got Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving returning to Boston. You have Kristaps Porzingis, who's going to be returning to Dallas whenever he returns. I assume that he's going to be ready to go for game one. I haven't seen the official he's available tweet yet as we were recording on a Monday afternoon, but we'll assume that he's going to be good to go for game one. At the very least, he's going to play a part in this series. We got some fun stuff to dig into. I think for me, outside of star theater, really good teams with interesting paths throughout this postseason, I start with the matchups like I always do, but it's really interesting in this case because the benefit and the beauty of Boston's defense is that they can mix and match however they want to. Jason Tatum defend the center if you want. Drew Holiday, you defend the center if you want. We'll put Jaylen Brown on our star. Maybe other times we'll put Drew Holiday on the star. We'll let Derrick White hound opposing point guard if they're the star. They can go in a multitude of directions. So I enter this series wondering, who's getting the Luka assignment? Who's getting the Kyrie assignment? In the March 1st matchup, we saw Jaylen Brown and Luka Doncic. I wonder if that holds. I would assume that that holds. I think because of how Boston switches, and again, they want to just play with matchups anyway. I'd imagine Luka sees a little bit of everyone. We'll see some Drew. We will see some Jaylen Brown. We will see some Jason Tatum switched on. I don't know how much we'll see of Derrick White on Luka Doncic, at least intentionally from Boston's side. I think that could be an interesting thing for Dallas to try to poke at. As the series goes along, as Derrick White is elite, but he's just smaller than Luka, and Luka generally just has fun with players that are smaller than him. But I think they go Jaylen Brown on Luka, Drew Holiday on Kyrie Irving, kind of like we saw in that second regular season matchup. So I guess from the Boston side, is that how you would go, or how do you foresee that going?
I think they'll go that way, but ultimately I don't think the matchups matter as much in this particular series, only because it's going to be about, can you emphasize your will and can you hit the right buttons defensively? And how are you willing to hit the right buttons defensively? I think one of the bigger differences for a Boston in this series, they have a whole lot of personnel to slow Luka and Kyrie down in theory. They have different tricks they can use to slow them down in theory. How do they want to go about it and how much conviction will they have is where I'm looking at. Because I don't think Boston's necessarily had a problem defending in these playoffs. But we've seen if you are not certain of exactly what you want to do against Dallas, they can now pick you apart. Mm-hmm. And so is this a series where Boston's defensive personnel, their ability to mix schemes, their ability to switch shines? Do they have the personnel just to make it tough on Dallas? And are we looking at the type of series where, hey, Drew and White can defend Kyrie, Tatum and Brown can switch and contain. They do the trick where, hey, Jason Tatum, you guard a big and you are not going to be a switch. We're going to take that pick and roll off the table. Do they mix and match? Do they start with that? I think that's a good point. Is the goal for Boston just to get one of, if not both, Luka of Kyrie to go 9 for 20, 8 for 22, 12 for 30. And when do you hit which button? And I think that's going to be the interesting part. With Luka, I think I assume we see Jaylen Brown. Screen navigation drop. Do they want to switch Al Horford to start? I'm not sure. How all comfortable will they be switching Al Horford and our Kristaps Porzingis? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But I expect everyone to get a shot at Luka. Mm-hmm. And if not at Kyrie, to a degree, just because of the way Boston likes to switch and get cross-match transition, those kind of things. It's interesting you mentioned the Derek White portion. Derek White, Jrue Holiday. Is Dallas going to go back to the double drag bag and have Kyrie as the first screener, get the switch, and now, hey, as you stated, you're smaller. This is a better navigation for me. Will Luka get into his spots and making shots make Boston blink?
Yeah.
I guess is where my head's at. And I honestly, the more we talk about it, the more we think about it, is Kyrie Irving the main one you try to turn the water off? So against Boston this year, Nikias, for Kyrie, 21 points, 2.5 assists, 41.9% from the field on 21.5 attempts, 28.6 from three on 7 attempts. Is Kyrie the piece where Boston says, hey, we can affect that shot making. We can contest that. We have multiple guys. We have size and length, and we have Jrue and Derek White who are active. We feel comfortable being able to take that away. And now you can't get to that blend that's been so important for Dallas during this run. But what happens if he knows the assignment again and just makes all those shots?
It becomes a different series altogether. And I think like that's what really popped when watching back the March matchup in particular. It was so much Luka Doncic to start that game. But then Kyrie got the pockets where he's, you know, flowing in transition or the ball just swings to him second side. He gets a drop and he just missed so many of these early looks. And Boston's kind of able to extend the lead. Dallas really wasn't able to get back into it to a serious degree. But it was just like, huh, what does this look like? Very basic thought. Hey, what are these misses or makes? But if these shots are made, what does Boston do against the wave? Do they alter their scheme? Is it just do better button for them? Or do they actually do something differently? And kind of like we talked about last series, and we've talked about it with or like you and JJ talked about on the Old Man of Three Things the week before last. Who's going to blink first on the who puts two on the ball front is going to be really interesting to me. Because like Boston just flat out doesn't do it if they don't have to. Like blitzing or even having to be at the level, like that isn't really part of their base. Like ideally, we'll just switch and keep this in front or we'll creep up to the level sometimes if we feel the need to, depending on who you are. But we want to keep this two on two. One, because they just have really good defenders and they can play it that way. But when you zoom out to the overall, like Joe Mazzulla ethos of winning the math battle, winning the shot profile battle, et cetera, if Derek White or Jrue Holiday or Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, if they can contain slash navigate screens, force you downhill, and now you got to try to finish over Kristaps or finish through Al Horford, okay, you're taking mid-range jumpers. You're taking short mid-range jumpers or push shots. If you are getting all the way to the rim, you're not going to have a lot of fun. And Boston has been a team throughout the entire season that doesn't foul a bunch on top of that. And so they're able to funnel you inside down the other end. They're just bombing away from three. They're getting the volume up in a multitude of ways. We've talked about Jason Tatum getting to his own shot from behind the arc. Like that can be a point of frustration for me sometimes when he's going to that shot. But in theory, he can get to that shot whenever he wants to. Derek White has become a much more willing and lethal pull-up shooter. Jaylen Brown can knock down threes. Kristaps can knock down threes off the pop. Al Horford can knock down threes off the pop. And on and on and on and on. And so to both the Luka and the Kyrie portion, can either one of them do enough to where Dallas is able to generate high-quality threes? If they're able to force Boston to bring that second defender up. You mentioned the double drag bag for Dallas. If it is, we get an initial switch with Kyrie as the screener. Or if they involve any of their other guards, perimeter players, that's the first screener. And then you go there. If you ding that enough, do we now start seeing some traps or some hedges on that second one? Like, will Boston be more willing to do that if, you know, Daniel Gafford's in the game right now? We'll hedge the second one. Let's make Daniel Gafford make a decision in space against this defense. Is that just going to be an entirely different challenge for him? Can Boston afford to play around with that? Or do they feel like, okay, we just can't give them two, period? Because this might be problematic for us moving forward. We don't want to give up corner threes when we largely don't do that. So I think it could really get interesting with that portion. And again, if Kyrie hits shots, does that drop turn into at the level, turn into blitzing, and what does that open up for Dallas? And what does that do for their shot profile?
See, here's the thing. How many shots would they have to make to get Boston to go that far? And I feel like that's the balance of the series. Can Dallas hit the right notes to get Boston in position where they feel like they have to do something different? Or is it not sustainable? Is this just a, hey, Luka cycles through everyone, and now we don't feel good about any of it. And now we, just because of that, we have to do something different. Is that the bit? What type of shots is Dallas going to generate? I think that's the balance. Can they get some easy ones in transition? Is that how they start to get their threes going? What happens against Boston's bench unit? How much do Peyton Pritchard and Sam Hauser get attacked? Mm-hmm. Is that the moments where now Dallas can put two on the ball, or they can open things up or get an indecision on a switch or anything like that? Does that shift things to where now we can only play X, Y, and Z? Like, it's just, which thing can Dallas poke at? It's not like they can't do it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not like Boston can't be beat and Dallas can't score on them. It's just, for Dallas to win this series, they are going to have to make the plays over and over and over again and make Boston pay for whatever they try. You need to get this to be a series where, hey, we put a big on Derrick Jones Jr. Now Derrick Jones Jr. is a screener and that hurt them. Okay, we felt good about this matchup on Luka. Now they go and now we get mismatches and he's scoring in the post. And now Kyrie's scoring gets dropped. You need the blend to make Boston sit back and say, hey, we can't just stick with our principles. We need to take something away. Mm-hmm.
You hit on a couple of things that I had in my notes and want to touch on. So I'm glad we're on similar wavelength here. To the transition point, it kind of ties into like an overall question I have about just the general feel and general pace of this series. Like, what type of series are you anticipating? And do you feel like either of these teams need the transition more than the other? Like, obviously, it'd be helpful to get easy ones off of turnovers and stuff. But just in terms of, we need to play with a level of tempo, who do you lean towards on that front?
Both of them. Here's the thing, right? Dallas needs to get easy baskets, I think, in this series. Boston cannot, this is not the series to play slow, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They have to keep their movement up. They have to keep their tempo up. They have to start their sets early. They can be deliberate. You know, you can attack matchups if you'd like. You can work the elbow and the post and do things, but you need to start early on the clock. Those one pass, one screen, up against the clock possessions aren't great. And if Dallas gets stops, they could play faster. We've seen Dallas's defense. Do you want to let them just sit and load up?
No.
Do you want to just have them stare and, okay, that's one screen. We switched it. Now it's not no quick attack. That's going to be another battle and another part of the balance. Dallas has done such a great job during this run of defending drives. And I think head coach Jason Kidd, after the Minnesota win, said every series has taught us something for the next series. If I messed that quote up, my fault. But coming off two series where they worked to limit Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's drives. And hey, OKC, these are the shots you get. They worked to limit Anthony Edwards' drives. How does Boston adjust to that early help? Can Dallas afford to send the same amount of help in this series? That's where I don't think that Boston wants to mess around too much with the tempo deal, to where now you play slow. And while you have the shooters, are you generating the kind of shots you want? On the flip side, though, I will say this. Actually, you know what? Let's pause right here.
Okay.
Boston gets criticized for their shot selection sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. They have no problem letting it fly from deep. Mm-hmm. And they have no problem generating quality looks from deep. I think that's the important distinction. They can take some ones that are like, I don't know, but they can generate some quality looks. Is that the bit? And is that the adjustment for a Dallas team that's done a great job of helping recover? Because they can move their personnel around as well. It's not the same automatic, hey, our big is just going to be right here and can rotate at the low man. We've seen Boston run that set all playoff long where Al Horford's just on the wing, and now we can play out of it. The drive and kick that Boston could get. Is Dallas going to be able to have the same comfort with a Boston team that can drive and kick? Or does this become like the OKC series? Where actually, because you're doing this, you're not getting any of these. Mm-hmm. And we'll live with that.
See, that's where, like, I started with the matchups in terms of who's defending Kyrie, who's defending Luka, and then on the flip side, who's defending the Jays. But, like, this is where it became, like, a bigger deal for me. Because it's just like, okay, we have these bigs that can be moved around. And in the case of Boston, like, we have bigs that can shoot. So, like, how does Dallas deal with that when, like, they had to stretch big against Chet? But, like, they haven't had to face this level of three-point shooting up and down the roster during this postseason run. And for Boston, who is fine with tapping into the we will just put our big on non-shooter here, et cetera, Dallas does have a star in Luka to where, one, we can just hunt you anyway if we want. And even if you do want to be on non-shooter, like, okay, well, fine then. We'll just go, we'll have a guard screen. Like, you're technically winning. You're not attacking the big, like, we're not attacking the big like you don't want us to do. But we can just punish you here over and over and over and over and over again. And so for a Dallas team that has, you know, we saw PJ Washington and Derrick Jones Jr. handle Shea and Chet. And we can kind of go with one of our four or just have the wings defend star guard and star big. Like, what kind of optionality do they have on that front? And kind of a similar deal for Boston. Like, how much of this would do they want to tap into and how does it counter? And to the Dallas portion, depending on how they move guys around, if they want to experiment with, like, let's put PJ on Kristaps. So we can switch some of these pick and rolls with him. Is that a way, you know, if we do that and then we just get even funkier, like, okay, we'll put Daniel Gafford or Derek Lively on Jrue Holiday for a spell. Is that a way for Dallas to maintain some of the help principles that we saw in versus Minnesota versus OKC? And can they kind of dictate terms that way? If they can't tap into that bag, it's still going to be on Boston to play with a level of intention and a level of pace. But, like, they should have easier avenues to create the kind of shots that they want if Dallas can't cross-match to the same degree.
You know, you mentioned cross-matching. My eyes are on how much switching does Dallas want to do? Mm-hmm. Is that going to be the scenario where, hey, we keep this in front. We're not in rotation. The rotations we make are going to be these. You have to drive, and we're going to contest. Like, is that the balance for Dallas to now where they get Boston in the mud? I think for me in this playoff run, the formula has been there to beat Boston, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you got to score. We get y'all to play slow. We get y'all in the mud. Fourth quarter time. Hey, it's a close game. Y'all good? We win. Is that the bit for Dallas to where, hey, you guys don't have the same rhythm. You're not getting the same drive and kick. It's a close game in the fourth. Now all those post-ups or pick and rolls with Luka that you didn't necessarily, you felt comfortable staying at home, it's a little bit more impactful now.
Kind of have to.
The drop with Kyrie or the switch against Kyrie, if he's looking to attack, it's a little bit more impactful now. So is that just going to end up being the balance to where it's a back and forth? And now if it's a close game, each team has different things they can hit on.
Mm-hmm. Just quickly on the pick and roll front there. Almost 1.1 points per possession on Luka pick and rolls versus Boston this year. Again, two-game sample, so we'll see what that looks like as we have a whole series now. Regular season basketball different than playoff basketball, duh. Like, that's a solid number. Boston, again, largely did not split. Third lowest blitz rate against Luka among all the opponents that Luka faced this year. And with Kyrie seeing switches, over 1.2 points per possession on those trips when Kyrie saw a switch. And this is with, you know, as we mentioned, the March matchup in particular, didn't shoot all that well. But still able to generate some good stuff when he did score and or, okay, we have a matchup. We got a mismatch somewhere else. We can swing this and move it around. So that battle is going to be interesting. I guess flipping it to the Boston side of things, at least defensively, or Dallas defending, excuse me. What do you expect to see against Jason Tatum? Like, I brought up the matchups. Is it just going to be a bunch of switching from there? To kind of bounce off your earlier point, how much comfort Dallas will have with the switches. What is going to be the mindset for Jason Tatum? How early is he going to look to establish the drives against maybe some small defenders? Maybe if it is using whoever Kyrie's defending, whether that's Derek White or Jrue Holiday, let's go inverted pick and roll. Let's get the Kyrie switch. Let's see how well you hold up. Because Kyrie has been largely awesome defensively throughout this postseason run, honestly. And when healthy, like, I feel like it was a pretty solid defensive season for him during the regular season as well. So, like, I think Kyrie's just been fine on that end this year, honestly. But, like, how much of this does Jason Tatum in particular tap into? Is Boston able to establish, even if it's not just a static pick and roll, let's go inverted, let's get Jason Tatum at the elbow. Are you able to get early pressure, early body blows, and maybe even early fouls on Kyrie Irving? Does that impact what you see from Dallas's defense overall, does that impact what kind of Kyrie you get on the other end because he's taking these blows? Because I think above all the series that he's had so far, like this naturally is the one where you need the defense, the playmaking, and the capital S scoring from Kyrie in this series. And so I do wonder, like, how Boston looks to navigate that, and how do they find the balance between giving Jason Tatum a matchup that he likes, he can get downhill against, put pressure on Dallas's defense, maybe force some of that help and lead to generating some wide open quality 3-point shots, versus we don't need to just mismatch hunt. We need to establish this flow. We need to make sure that we are a moving target in some kind of way. It's going to be very interesting for me to kind of track how Boston and Tatum in particular kind of goes about the method of attack there.
Well, I think Boston does need the blend. They need the movement. They need to be able to attack matchups. And I'm very curious. You mentioned Tatum, right? And we'll get back to Tatum. But if we're talking about Kyrie on defense, the person that I'm looking at is Jaylen Brown. Because it feels like every time Jaylen Brown plays Kyrie Irving, he wants to drive and put this man under the basket. I don't know why. I don't know what's good. But that's the one. And with Jaylen Brown playing at this type of level that he's been in this postseason, the finishing that he's had in the paint this postseason, if Jaylen Brown could just get to Kyrie, does that change things? Mm-hmm. With Tatum, as far as you mentioned, as far as, hey, how do we defend Tatum if we're Dallas? I think it's got to be a mix. I think you've got to be able to throw some switching at him and throw some early help. He's done a really good job of playmaking, but is that going to dissuade him from driving? And is that the key to where, hey, we're showing this early help, are you going to drive and kick consistently, or are you going to cook or try and make a quick, easy pass? Mm-hmm. If you get a matchup, do we just hit you with a random double to make you think about it? Now, if you remember, Dallas did kind of start the Minnesota series saying, hey, Karl-Anthony Towns, we are going to double you, and then quickly said, actually, we are not going to do that anymore. So I don't know how much Dallas wants to put two on the ball, as we've talked about, but I think it's got to be a blend against Jason Tatum. He's got to see different things. You got to be able to hit the switches. If the Biz can contain and contest, if Kyrie can hold up, if Luka can hold up, we've seen what that gives for Dallas success in this playoff run. Mm-hmm. But I think if we're in a series where Kyrie gets dinged a little bit more than we have seen before, what does that change for Dallas? Is that the avenue where they have to put two on the ball or show more help or commit? And is Dallas ready for those rotations? You know, it's something we kind of talked about in the last series. It's one thing to rotate on the drives automatically. It's another when you have to make a different type of rotation. So does Boston find that pressure point and put that kind of pressure on the Dallas Mavericks defense?
I think they could. Like, it's just, again, a different level of overall talent. But within this context, a different level of shooting and spacing. And as you alluded to with Al Horford being on the wing, they can also just mix up their spacing in a way. So, okay, we've deemed Kyrie. We now know you want to show help. Al Horford's on the wing this time. Actually, no, he's not at the wing anymore. He's now setting this pin in. Now we're going to ping the ball around. Now we have generated yet another corner three because we can just do that to you. Or we can just flow second side, going to an empty side pick and roll or empty side handoff and just have a whole bunch of fun as you're now trying to rotate and recover. So like Boston just has, again, they have a lot of different avenues if they hit the right buttons. Again, there has to be a level of intention and a level of pace. Like even circling back to the transition point, you know, you look back at the transition stats throughout the regular season for both of these teams, not necessarily the matchups, but just overall, like they're pretty much identical in terms of transition frequency per clean in the glass. Efficiency numbers kind of go back and forth. But like they go about it different ways. Like Boston can turn you over, but in general, okay, let's attack. Let's get downhill early. Let's Jaylen Brown was going to go into an early post up if you cross match or if you don't match up the way you want to. Jason Tatum can do the same thing. We can go early drag right here. With Dallas, it's been more of the we got bored, quick outlet ahead. Let's have some fun with some of these early attacks. And even if it turns into a string out, let's set up. If you're not matched up correctly, you're now feeding Kyrie and or Luka something. And I just wonder like which way that battle is going to go, both in terms of, as I asked earlier, like who needs that portion of the program more? Because I think it's going to be important for both with how good these defenses are. But like who needs it more? And, you know, similar theme with this pod right now, this is a different challenge for Boston on the transition front. Because as I've talked about with their defense and their transition defense in particular, part of why they're so good at it is because they have a bunch of versatile defenders up and down the spectrum. They don't have to think too much about who they're picking up. this might just be the first series that they've had this postseason run where they kind of have to think about who's matching up where and who's grabbing who after a miss or after a live ball turnover. Because it's not, you may be put in some of those positions early on to where Dallas can attack and legitimately draw a second defender.
Can I offer a pushback?
Sure.
Didn't they just play the Pacers?
They did. But like, even with that indie group, like they didn't have a Luka. And then as the series went on, they eventually didn't have a Tyrese either. Like, in terms of the overall pace, that was different. But in terms of some of the early matches, they may have to try to navigate. Like, I don't think it's to the same degree to what Dallas might pose. I guess it's my argument.
Well, do you think Boston's uncomfortable? They may want certain people on Luka, but they're going to switch. Like, they're fine. Yeah. They're going to stick with their principles. So do you think that it's one of those deals where, all right, cool. Drew, you're there. Take it real quick. I think that's the strength of Boston's defensive personnel, no?
Yes. Like, I don't think it's going to be a level of, like, fear. But I do think because, again, like Luka is, respectfully, like Luka is better than Pascal. He is better than Tyrese, especially like a hobbled version of Tyrese. That's a different level of pressure he can put on them early than what those two could.
He's slower than them, though.
He is slower. Yes, he's slower than them.
No, I was just pushing back on the greatest challenge thing. I was like, they just had to go Zoom for like 5 games. That's not fun.
That's, you know, that's fair. That's fair.
So you're saying the actions they could have?
Yeah.
Okay, got you. That's all I had.
Yeah, oh, okay. I just wanted to leave that up. So I was just like, hey, that could just be a little bit different. If it's Kyrie hit, if Luka's leaking out, if he's not the one defending the shot, Luka gets an early matchup. Or again, if it's a Luka hit or hit to Kyrie, like that could be a lot of fun for that group. So it's just something to keep an eye on, especially in light of, again, how similar the transition offenses and how, you know, how often they got out in transition this year. Like, it'd just be a fun little margin thing that I'm keeping an eye on.
Well, here, can I flip one of your questions back to you?
Sure.
Who's transition more important for in this series?
I probably lean... Dallas. Actually... Actually, no. I think I slightly lean Dallas.
Yeah.
To get the early one so they can set their defense. Because I do think while they have just been elite throughout this entire postseason run and pretty much since March, they've been elite defense. Like, I do think Boston's defense is more versatile overall. And so, like, I don't think that they obviously get a bump if they're setting their defense after transition scores. But, like, I think you may see a larger gap between the two teams in terms of their set defense versus their transition defense. So I probably lean Dallas getting the early ones, being able to set up shop, being able to load their help.
Which bigs do you expect to hold up better defensively? Al Horford and Kristaps Porzingis or Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford?
Well, like, I think of the four, like, I trust Lively the most to be able to navigate space. As a unit, honestly, as a unit, like, it's probably the Dallas group in seven is probably where I lean. Like, I don't know how willing Boston is going to be to just flat out switch Kristaps, depending on what the action is or what the cross matches are. With Al Horford, like, we've seen the formula has kind of been, we will start you in a deeper drop. If they ding you, we'll bring you up. And then if all else fails, then we'll lean to the switching. Like, it's felt more like a last resort for Horford switches throughout this postseason run versus, you know, the last couple of playoff runs where we could just do that and just take this off the table immediately. And with Dallas, again, like, I've just been a fan of Derek Lively in space. They've experimented more with the Gafford switches, which give me more pause than the Lively switches. We'll frame it that way. But they're at least becoming more willing to just do that early on. So I'm intrigued. And on top of that, Maxi Kleber coming back feels pretty big. Like, he's not going to be my official X factor, but his role in the series could be big if either one of them get dinged in space. And I look more at Gafford than Lively in terms of the beat in space portion of the program. But if it does become untenable for Daniel Gafford to defend some of the Al Horford or Kristaps pick and pops, or if we are switching out early and Jaylen Brown's just winning with drives, Jason Tatum's just winning with drives and or getting Gafford in foul trouble, like, Kleber's ability to be able to switch out and you feel pretty decent about it, I think I probably give the Dallas big room the overall edge in terms of where I feel better about.
That's fair. Can I reveal what made me think of that?
Yes.
It's kind of like as we have this evolving conversation, it's a different type of finals preview. If you're a longtime dunker, you know what this is. You. So I would say in my mind, I was thinking, okay, I think both teams are going to try and work to take away those bigs offensively. But which gets established first? The pick and pop with Horford and Porzingis or the pick and roll with Lively and Gafford? And that's where my mind was going because it's like, okay, I could totally see a world where Boston's like, you know what? Let's put a big on PJ Washington or Derrick Jones Jr. And then actually, let's run action with Derrick Jones Jr. And ding that. And now, okay, we don't want to do that anymore. Let's put our big on a big. And now, hey, bigs, you are rolling. And I see the same for Dallas where it's like, okay, are we switching? Are we convincing with it? Or do we put two on the ball? Does the pop open up? That's where it gets intriguing for me. So that's where my head went. Sorry.
Okay. No, I think that's fair. Like, that's one of the questions I had as well. More specifically, with the Horford and Kristaps pops, what kind of attention will Dallas show to them early on? Because, like, combing through the film of just the pops from both of those guys, you would see the possession to where, okay, it's just two on the ball. We'll leave the pop open. We'll have a third defender kind of rotate late. But, okay, we are fine with conceding this above the break shot from him. Like, fine with, in, you know, context of taking away option A and option B, that kind of thing. So, like, we've seen that. We've also seen some of the peel switching to where, okay, let's just take this off the table. And in those reps against Kristaps, it is an immediate, oh, you're small. Let me just mosey right over to the free throw line real quick. Seal, my hand is up. Give me the basketball, please. And as you remember, during the regular season, most efficient post offense in the NBA with any sort of volume was Kristaps Porzingis getting the ball in that wheelhouse and either sprinkling in those turnarounds or let me take a dribble or two, let me pivot, I will shoot over the top of you and get me a layup, or you're fouling me because I'm just bigger than you. And so, like, I do wonder, again, what the early appetite is going to be for the Kristaps pops in particular, because, you know, he's not going to be afraid to just take those shots. And as I've applied to Al Horford throughout the back end of this postseason run, like, one of my questions heading into a couple of series now were, hey, they're probably going to give Al these shots. How willing is he going to be able to take these threes? And we got like a 15 three-point attempt game from Al. He just let it fly. And so I'm less worried about the volume, but Kristaps is just naturally a more dangerous shooter. So does that just become a, we need to see two or three of these go down before we start switching immediately or before we start going into the peel switching and just trying to keep it flat? I am curious to see what that portion of the program is going to look like. And to the other side of it, assuming, because I think in the March 1st matchup, it started with Jason Tatum on Derek Lively. It was very clear, like, okay, we're just taking this off the table if we can. We're turning this into a switch. Let's have some fun here. I just think the cross-matching elsewhere could get interesting. And for a pair of teams that haven't super hammered the offensive glass, like, I do think Dallas can win some of those margin plays on the interior. Like, I do wonder what that portion is going to look like if they just immediately switch some of these Lively and Gafford pick and rolls. Like, could that be an area in which Dallas is able to swing a game? Because, okay, we just had 13 in game one or game two. Y'all are switching these. We're not getting the normal pick and roll offense. It's now a one-on-one, you know, ISO shot created from Kyrie or Luka inside the arc. But now Lively or Gafford is diving to the basket. We get some early ones. This is how we win 95 to 91 or whatever. It's going to be an interesting battle for me.
That's a great answer. I like that.
Thank you. Thank you. I do what I can. While we're talking about some defensive scheming, how much of a factor do you think the zone's going to play in this one?
From who?
From either side.
I think it'll be a curveball type beat. Like, they mixed in the Jrue Holiday, I'm here zone, and Dallas. I don't know how much Dallas. If Dallas goes to it, I feel like it would be their ATO or things are not going right. In my opinion, just with the way they've had like their philosophy defensively in this playoff run, so it's not at the top of my list. What about you?
I got you. Like, it was interesting to me just because, like, I've just had so much fun watching the Jrue-led zone for Boston, and so there's just a general will we see this type beat. But like going back through that March matchup, I think midway through the first quarter, Dallas breaks out the zone and Jaylen Brown immediately gets to the free throw line and gets a shot to go. It's like, oh, right. Boston was an elite offense against the zone this year. And like thinking back to the first round series against Miami when they wanted to sprinkle in the zone. And Jason Tatum immediately said, let me go to the corner. I'm going to pick on this guy, Duncan Robinson in this case. I'm going to get this matchup. Y'all are going to have to react or I'm going to get an easy shot. And so like it's a balance of seeing it from Dallas a little bit in the regular season matchups between these two teams. Also, Dallas technically playing zone at a higher rate during the postseason than in the regular season, but still not high volume. And so I'm curious, like, when, you know, to your point, will it just be an ATO deal or will it actually be a legitimate counterpunch to try to slow Boston down? And again, for Boston, like, do they just want to do it because they can do it well?
That's fair.
So I was intrigued.
Whose bench do you trust? And how many of them do you trust?
This is why we do the dunker spot. My next question was going to be, how do you feel about these benches? That's amazing. I think for me, one, I just want to know what the Dallas bench is going to look like. Like, naturally, we're going to see Lively. We're going to see Josh Green. Boston's kind of done the thing where, like, we can experiment with a deeper bench in game one, and then we cut this back down if it ain't working like that. I wonder if Dallas says, hey, Tim, we kind of need 3-point volume in this series. Here's a stint at the end of the first quarter, early second quarter. Can you go 2 of 3 from three in this stint? Help us tie this by. Like, I don't know if he's going to be a full-time, like, rotation piece in this series, to be clear. But, like, I do wonder in regards to how important the math of this series is going to be in this one and the amount of switching that Boston can do to kind of take some of the easier shot pockets out of the table for Dallas. Do you just need a gunner for a few minutes? Which then begs the question, well, if you're playing Tim, like, is he going to be able to hold up defensively? Depending on what those minutes or who's going to be on the floor during those minutes. So that could just get funny. So I guess overall, like, it's probably, I guess I probably lean Dallas because I've really enjoyed what Derek Lively's been able to do. And Josh Green has really provided some nice energy and a nice spark on both ends. Jaden Hardy has played well throughout this postseason run. And it's, I guess it's just a numbers game, really, on the Boston front. Like, imagine if Kristaps is ready for game one, you're bringing Horford off the bench. He's obviously good. You have Peyton Pritchard, who's been solid. Sam House is going to get run. Like, I'm curious to see what those minutes are going to look like in this particular series.
Get over here, buddy.
Is he going to be ready or will he continue to hold up, rather? Because as Boston fans will tell you, and I think fairly so, like, he has held up a lot better than I think people would give him credit for. So, like, it may not be a, you know, press the red button, get him out of here type beat. But it's going to be worth keeping an eye on, especially if those early second quarter minutes in particular is going to be like Kyrie plus bench. And Kyrie just says, okay, fine, let's dance. Let's have some fun. It's like, I'll flip the question to you. Whose bench do you feel better about heading into this one?
I think it just kind of depends. I think Dallas has got to figure out who's going to play in the series. That may take them a game or two, to your point. Mm-hmm. I think Boston has the consistency. The only issue is going to be how important are those start of fourth quarter minutes going to be and who's going to be out on the floor and do those guys get put in action and do they get tested to where, hey, well, you also need to make plays on this end. Are you going to be able to make drives? Are you going to be able to make shots? If they can make them pay, then the defense doesn't matter as much. But they're going to need those minutes. I don't know if you want to just go with your top six to a degree. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a potential for Dallas once they figure out exactly who is going to be the people that are playing. I think for me, if Boston takes a hit, what happens then? What does that look like if their bench unit just isn't the same? Now, again, they can stagger all sorts of people, so it's not ever going to be the end of the world, I don't think. But I probably lean Boston with an eye for what Dallas can do lineup-wise.
Okay, that makes sense. Another question that I had in my notes, more so a closing question than anything, because I think we have seen, particularly on the Boston side during the regular season, like they are comfortable playing Kristaps and Horford together if they want to. So I guess just in general, like, does this series trend bigger or smaller in your opinion?
As far as closing the game?
Yeah.
I would think bigger.
Okay.
I don't think Dallas went. I mean, they both have small ball lineups that they can go to, but how much have we seen those small ball lineups in this playoff run? how much have they been the catalyst for these runs? Like Dallas literally has two bigs because, hey, we really like what that does for us. Yeah. So I don't necessarily know if we get there. Mm-hmm. What say you?
Like, I probably lean with you. Like, I don't know, you know, to the closing portion, like, I don't think they're going to close with Al and Kristaps together unless something has gone, unless like Al and Kristaps just cooking from three and we just really want to shrink the floor right now. And, or, you know, like Drew is one of eight from three or something. And we just like this lineup as it gave us a run midway through the fourth. We're going to close with this group. So to your point, like, I do think it's going to be, like, it'll be single big for Boston. I don't imagine we see like PJ at the five to close things out or anything like that. The closest thing that we get to a smaller group, I think, with Dallas would be like them closing with Cleaver, I guess. Cleaver at the five. And even that would signify Gafford hasn't played well and Lively's in foul trouble or has gotten hurt to really get to that level of downsizing. But I do wonder, like, again, like early second quarter, mid, late third quarter, do we see Dallas like really downsize, or do we see Boston try to not necessarily steal, but, you know, let's get a few minutes of Kristaps and Al and see what it looks like. Let's see how y'all defend it. Especially if Dallas is having a game or a stretch where they're just crushing on the offensive glass and Boston just countering with, okay, let's get a little bit more size out here. We can still be aggressive out here. We still switch if necessary or show we got another big person downhill so y'all can't get extra possession. So it's just one of those things kind of like at the back of my mind to how much of this will we see. It's not like factor number two of who wins the series for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, do you feel better about the series now that we've talked about it? I know we're not done, I'm curious.
Like a little bit. Like if nothing else, it's just made me more excited because I think the versatility from both of these teams really stand out. And they can just tap so many different scheme buttons. In addition to just having the high-end talent of Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kristaps. And if you want to drop like half a tier, I guess, you know, Derek White still. And naturally, they got Luka and Kyrie on the other end that can just toss whatever scheme you are trying to do over the top rope. So I'm more excited. Like, I do still have like some questions on the margins that I think could end up deciding something like this if things are close. Like, talked a little bit about some of the lineup staggering stuff like that. Like, early second quarter is going to be interesting for me. It's kind of like a mini battleground in this series. As, huh?
Keep going.
What I do?
This man will be listening to me.
I do. Here I am just trying to segue to get into the stat that I had on the second quarter portion. I got yelled at. I just can't win. But anyway. But no, in all seriousness, the fact that the Kyrie without Luka minutes and the Jaylen without Jason minutes have both been positive during this postseason run, and the fact that Luka and Jason both are normally we're playing the entire first. Now we get a break early second, or they'll come out like the last minute of the first. And then you get that pocket without them early in the second. Like, that particular portion of the game is going to be really interesting, where we see some playing around in the game one in particular with what the lineup combinations are going to be. But just in general, like, that can be where some of these swings happen in this game, whether Lee gets extended or we're cutting it in half because Kyrie has it going or Jaylen's just getting downhill a bunch. So that's just something that I'm keeping an eye on there.
Great stat. Continue. I was just joking, buddy.
No, you're fine. Come on, I ain't like upset. We good. I guess circling back to the offensive rebound portion, like worth noting per clean the glass, both the Mavericks and the Celtics take a very high degree of a high share of three-pointers after offensive rebounds. So if we're talking about or looking ahead to potential like swing sequences late in this game, if you do have Derek Lively on the glass or on the other side of Drew's crashing from the corner for an offensive rebound or Derek White's crash to the corner, this does not feel like a leak out series for either party in crucial moments of this game, because that will be a tap out. That will be a quick three. Both teams very willing to take those shots. So like that's another margin thing that I'll be keeping an eye on. I already talked about the zone. And so from there, did you have any more like big picture series questions or comments or thoughts before flowing into the X factors?
Well, I'm just thinking about one, we talked a lot. We're going to know exactly what they're going to do after game one, but it's just interesting to see what are the paths to victory. What is it? What is going to be the thing that puts pressure? Can Luka and Kyrie make enough shots to where, hey, you know what? Not even two on the ball, but we're holding that help that we're showing. And now here comes PJ Washington, Derrick Jones, et cetera, et cetera. I'm trying to think about how much Boston needs Tatum and Brown in this series. Mm-hmm. Or is this the series where it's, okay, we're fine with Drew and Derrick White shooting? You know, there's a lot of possible outcomes. I think it's going to be a really fun basketball series because you have two teams that can defend at a high level. You have star play. I just want to see what it looks like. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, this is going to be a good one, man. This is going to be a good one. I hope, as I wish for all the basketball series I watch, like I don't want any injuries. I just want both of these teams to be as close to full strength as possible. I am ready to just kind of sink my teeth into the series. This should be a whole lot of fun, to say the least. All right, Steve, let's flow into some X factors. Who are your X factors heading into this one?
Well, you took one of mine. So Derrick White and Derrick Jones Jr. for me. it's always Drew Holiday for me, but I'm going to go Derrick White just because he can't go backwards for this team offensively. They need him. He's too important. They're going to need his self-creation. They're going to need him to be aggressive. They're going to need him to make Dallas pay. I think in the regular season, 9 points a game, 4.5 assists, 31% from the field, 30 from three. Obviously regular season, but it can't be that. So Boston can't afford for Derrick White to go backwards, Drew Holiday to go backwards offensively. For Dallas, I think it's Derrick Jones Jr. I think he's got to be ready to make timely baskets, to defend multiple positions, and he's going to have to add those drives to really help things out for Dallas. Those are my X factors. What say you?
Okay, well, first, an apology. I did not mean to steal Drew Holiday from you.
It's a joke.
I know. I was leaning into the... We're doing bits. It's fine. But no, Drew Holiday for me, as you mentioned, like they're going to need the shot making from him. And if we do, again, get the mirror of the March matchup of where it's Kyrie Irving taking on either Derrick White or Drew Holiday, I think Drew's usage as a screener can be very important in this series to either just feed matchups to, or if there's being two put on the ball, or if Dallas decides to go with some kind of drop, just can't keep it 2-on-2. Like Drew's decision-making in the short roll and his decision-making overall is going to be important. And defensively, naturally, if he's defending Kyrie, he has a pretty big job to do. Navigate, contest without fouling, make sure Kyrie doesn't get in rhythm. If we do see Drew Holiday versus Luka at all, he's going to be at a size disadvantage, but Drew is strong, knows how to get low, dig into the base, etc. Can he navigate? Can he contest without fouling? Can he bother the Luka handle enough to where at least you're throwing off the cadence of when he's going into like some of the step backs from three or inside the arc? Can you knock Luka off rhythm just enough to where you don't feel the need to send a second defender or a third defender to that point? So definitely keeping an eye on Drew Holiday. And then for Dallas, I was torn between PJ, Derrick Jones Jr. and Daniel Gafford. And by extension with Gafford, Maxi Kleba, I did land on PJ Washington. Because I do feel like he's going to spend time on both of the J's. Like, I would guess that he starts on Jaylen. Like, hey, you are big, you are strong, you can slide, absorb some of these drives, big dog, please. But I think he's going to spend time on both. And assuming that that's the case, again, similar to Drew Holiday, he has one heck of a job to do to be able to contain either one of those guys and do so without fouling and make life tough on them. Make sure they don't get to the spots. Make sure they don't get to the free throw line. And then offensively, he can't become a help point. At best, he needs to be, if he hits shots, we tip our caps. He can't become a legitimate, we're putting Kristaps on you. We are putting Al Horford on you because we just don't care or trust that you will knock down enough shots or will make enough good decisions attacking closeouts to where it doesn't matter. I think pulling up very quickly, I think 42% on corner threes throughout the postseason run. We did see, you know, pockets in the Thunder series before he just lost his mind, and pockets of the Minnesota series, though Dallas obviously won in five, to where we were putting two on Luka, ball to PJ, let's see what you do. And it is a missed shot, which you just live with those. Sometimes you miss shots. But it's more, you don't want to see the hesitation start to creep back in to where he has an open shot. And like, let me think about it. Okay, now let me drive. But now the defense is back in front. And now we got to start this chain all over again, which puts a further magnifying glass on when is Dallas starting their offense. Because the while I think they are more comfortable playing slower and deeper into the clock than Boston is, I don't think they want to live in that world against this Boston defense. So I think it's going to have to be quick decision-making for PJ. like, duh, make shots, because making shots is important in a basketball game. But it's more so, what are you doing if you are left alone? Whether it's two on the ball versus Luka, or if they do try to experiment with putting a big on you so they can keep Al or Kristaps near the rim, how quickly are you taking these shots? How quickly are you reading, this is an aggressive closeout, let me get downhill, let me get to this push shot, or let me get all the way to the rim? It's going to be a big series for him. Also, before getting into predictions, I just had a couple of questions pop up in my head, if I can circle back very quickly. So, like, back to Boston's defense, and something that I brought up heading into the Indiana series, not just the personnel, not just, like, basic scheme versatility, they can switch, drop, whatever, whatever. But, like, some of the rotations that Boston can make, like, one of the things I pointed out with Indies, like, okay, here's a pick and roll, here's a drive. This guy from the strong side corner is now going to pick up this drive, and the guy initially guarding Tyrese can now veer off, et cetera. Within the lens of we want to throw different things at Luka, how much leeway do you think Boston actually has? Like, how creative can they be with some of the, like, rotation stuff, on top of general scheme things?
What do you mean?
Like, do you think they can play around with any kind of creative, we are rotating off of this guy, but not this guy? Let's try to crowd Luka on some of these drives.
I think they could. I mean, it depends on who's spaced, when they're spaced, where the attack's coming from. I just don't know if they will. You know, I think that's part of the mystery of the series. What does Boston want to tap into and when? Is it just going to be, again, do we put, you know, a big on a non-shooter, quote unquote? Is that our move? And now they're always going to be here. Or, you know, how much? I don't know if they'll dip into that right away. You know what I'm saying? I think they can get creative. Is there a concern level here for you with that?
No, not necessarily a concern level. It's just, again, I think the general sentiment against star players in general is we cannot show insert star here the same thing over and over, or they will carve it up. We have to mix looks. And so I'm more so asking, within the mix, the looks bag, like, how deep are they getting? Is it just going to be we will switch and double, come at the level? Or will we see a whole bunch of funky stuff against Luka?
I don't know how much funky things we'll see unless Luka dictates it, just because of their personnel. I feel like they feel very confident with all their guys being able to guard Luka to a degree. So I don't know if we're going to see the more exotic things. There may be some off-ball stuff where, okay, Luka maybe comes off the screen and they just switch a different way. More of that than just on-ball for me. Maybe some late switches. Like, I don't think they're going to get too deep in that bag. Unless Sam Hauser's involved, maybe. No disrespect.
Yeah. But no, that's what I'm asking. So I was curious about that front. Steve, do you have a series prediction?
Boston 7 or Dallas in 6? I'm going to go with Dallas in 6.
Okay. I probably lean Boston in 6 right now. Like, I do think they have more solves on both ends than Dallas does in this one. Just personnel difference there. But good Lord, it is hard to watch what Luka just did in that game 5 in particular and bet against that dude. Because, like, as the point's been made, like, elsewhere, like, Dallas is entering this series with the best player in the series, with all due respect to Jason Tatum. And when you do have that kind of edge, and with Luka in particular, the ability to, oh, this is a switch, I could beat that. Oh, this is a drop, I could get to my spots and beat that. Oh, you're blitzing, I can make any pass in the book. Or just string this out and really put you in peril. Like, his ability to do that could just flip this series on its head on its own, in addition to whatever Kyrie can do. But again, like, I do think Boston is a better team. And ultimately, because Boston is, they have the personnel and is able to switch as much as they can, like, I do foresee this is just going to be, I think Boston just takes a lot more threes than Dallas does in this series. I think they're able to generate more of those looks. Assuming that their half-court defense is ready to play, like, I do think they'll have the transition opportunities on top of that. And so between Boston in 6 and Boston in 7, I'd probably stay Boston in 6, I think would be my official prediction heading into this one. I think Boston gets their first title since 08. Maybe lean there. Any closing comments, thoughts, questions, etc.?
No, should be a fun one, man.
Okay. Let's have some fun. All right. Well, before we close this thing out, let's shift to the W side, as we had a lot of things happening over the weekend. Commissioner's Cup play officially started on Saturday. We got Sky Fever. We got the Camila Cardoso debut, all of the things, and more things, and more things, and more conversations, and even more things. Then a fun slate on Sunday. So, and naturally, we have recorded since Friday. So, what's up?
I was going to tell you the Kia Players of the Month for the WNBA dropped.
Ah, thank you.
Alyssa Thomas from the Connecticut Sun, the Eastern Conference Player of the Month, 14.9 rebounds and 8.7 assists for the undefeated Connecticut Sun. And Asia Wilson of the Las Vegas Aces, Western Conference Player of the Month, 26.5 points, 12.5 rebounds, 2.8 blocks. So there you go, buddy.
Okay, well, thank you for that because I was not on Twitter. So naturally, I would have been very upset when we closed the recording and I would have saw that news. So thank you for that. As far as just general weekend takeaways, I guess, as you mentioned, Asia Wilson, Asia largely just did not have it on Friday against the Atlanta Dream. A huge win by the Atlanta Dream over the Las Vegas Aces. I think career best night from three for Alicia Gray, at least in terms of the efficiency on that amount of volume. I was impressed with Atlanta's defense in that one. So it's very, very funny to record a mailbag question about the Atlanta Dream. Like, hey, well, what is success for this team? What's going on here based on what you've seen? Like, how do you feel about them? And then they just beat Vegas in regulation. And then immediately followed that up with another basketball game that did not end in a win. And we will leave it there. So still very much in a headlock with the Atlanta Dream. We will see what happens there. But as you also mentioned, Alyssa Thomas, first thing on the list for me, the Connecticut Sun are freaking ridiculous on defense. Like, they're just ridiculous, period, as they are the only undefeated team in the W as of right now. Heading into Tuesday slate, no games on Monday as we record on the Monday, but heading into Tuesday slate, best defense in the W by a wide margin, an 89.1 defensive rating. The Lynx are second at 92.7. It's early in the season, but the ball pressure from their guards, Ty Harris has brought it. We've talked about Dejanay Carrington on the pod already, but what Dejanay Carrington has been able to do, like, she's making an early case for an all-defensive team. Dewana Bonner and her length, her ability to switch out when necessary. Alyssa Thomas just blowing things up. You try to post her up, good luck. You try to iso her, good luck. If you try to bring her into a screening action, she's blitzing that sucker, and you are not having a good time. She is liable to just snatch the ball away from you or force a difficult pass that will likely be taken the other way. The Connecticut Sun, best pick and roll defense in W so far per second spectrum, blitzing pick and rolls at the second highest rate in the lead per second spectrum. And again, a lot of that is Alyssa Thomas just wrecking stuff. I've just had a lot of fun, and the offense continues to flow with Alyssa Thomas naturally as a hub. Had the triple-double in the season opener, if I remember correctly, but had a couple of more near calls as well. But her general direction, Ty Harris hunting her shot a little bit more. Dejanay Carrington hasn't had the three ball going yet, but seeing the improved comfort as a driver still. Dewana Bonner, averaging 19 points per game, hasn't had the three ball falling yet either, but yet her drives have really hit. Looked this up earlier, I was like, it does feel like the drives have been really good for Dewana Bonner. 1.08 points per possession on any trip featuring a Bonner drive, and on direct drives, which means she shoots or she passes to someone, it's an assist opportunity, et cetera. It goes up to 1.15 points per possession. Among 38 players with at least 20 direct drives, Dewana Bonner is fourth in overall drive points per possession, trailing only Asia Wilson, Natasha Cloud, and Sabrina Ionescu. Steve, as we've also talked about, Sabrina's drives. So give you the quick hat tip there. And then just on direct drives among that 38-player group, Dewana Bonner first in points per possession. It is going to be terrifying when the three-point shot starts to fall for her once again. So I wanted to give the quick salute to the Connecticut Sun, who are just rolling through folks right now. And been able to eke out a couple of close wins as well. It's kind of showing the mental toughness there and their ability to execute and ultimately their ability to just shut you down late in games. Again, not having a lot of fun trying to face that Sun defense. Mentioned the Camila Cardoso debut, 11.6 rebounds in that one. But more than anything, like, she really popped for me defensively. Like, the size naturally stands out. Like, good luck trying to finish over her. Defending a few of the Leah Boston post-ups, and Leah just wasn't able to gain any kind of leverage. Like, some of that was just late clock stuff, which didn't help Ali on that front, but sturdy post defender already. Defended 21 pick and rolls in that game against the Fever. 0.47 points per possession allowed on those trips per second spectrum. And what was fun for me was them mixing in, more so in the second half than the first, but mixing in Camila at the level and even a couple of traps against Caitlin Clark. And I was like, wait a minute. if Camilla can do that, if she can move well enough to do that, and or if she just understands angles well enough to cut off ball handlers in that kind of coverage, that fits what Chicago wants to do in terms of their aggression, just having a big at the level or playing higher when necessary. If that's the level of scheme versatility you can expect from Camilla moving forward, again, it's game one, so we'll see what game two looks like. I'm even more excited about what that's going to look like. So I wanted to give her the hat tip there. And then just a quick shout out to Monique Billings. Was an Atlanta Dream last year, signs with the Sparks, eventually waived by the Sparks, picked up by the Dallas Wings on a hardship contract with Natasha Howard out. And she just had 19 and 15, and she's averaging career highs in just about everything. 14 points, nearly 9 boards. She's fourth in the W in offensive rebounds per game, nearly 3 assists, averaging over a block per game. 54% on twos, 33% for three on low volume. Basically, everything except three-point percentage would be a career high for her right now. So just wanted to salute what she's been able to do in Dallas on both ends of the floor. Like, they really utilize her mobility defensively and offensively. The drive from her has been fun to mix in alongside the handoff stuff and the occasional post-ups, and again, killing the offensive glass. So that concludes my W spiel, as I have spoken quite a bit. Steve, what's popped for you over the past few days?
Bounce back weeks for the Liberty and the Lynx. Benai Jelani Hamilton being a very important part for the Liberty's offense, and the impact that has had when she and Jonquel Jones are playing at a high level, it's very hard to deal with that offense. I think it just helps lend to the flow that they have as a unit, because now we're seeing Benaija running more pick and roll, being used as a screener in pick and roll, more post-ups with sets being run behind it, kind of shifting some of the offense towards her, which now allows everything else to kind of flow a little bit better. And they can, you know, if Benaija is driving and the defense helps, look at where the kicks go to. So it's been really fun to watch her growth offensively this year and her take that bigger role offensively. I think for Jonquel to be this good at the start of the season, as opposed to working into it to a degree, it's really hard because you got the inside out game and it puts pressure on you. So I thought it was a good bounce back week for Liberty. I think it was a good bounce back week for the Lynx as well. Once again, showed off that defense and the kind of pressure they can put on you. Nafisa Collier has been really tough to deal with. But I think one of the most important things for Minnesota is just finding different ways to win, finding different avenues to get success. And I think that's going to be part of their journey to try and get to that top level of the W. It's just, okay, if the offense isn't this, do we have our defense? If our defense isn't here, can we score to make up for it? Can we figure out those things as we go on? I did want to give a salute to the Dallas Wings. They are competing. They don't have a ton to show for it, but they are competing. So I want to give a shout out to Arike and the Wings. It's tough sledding, but they're right there. And I would probably say Diane Taurasi still cooking.
Was it 31 on Sunday night?
Cooking.
Pretty big time. Yeah, pretty big time performance. You already mentioned her usage as a screener has been a lot of fun for Phoenix as a team that, again, they just move you around. Anyone can screen. It's kind of similar to some of the NBA teams we've talked about. We will space you out, and we will poke at matchups if necessary. We'll have guard screen for Kalia Copper to curl off of and let her get downhill, let her boogie. Again, Diana Taurasi can be used as a screener in that way, or go on ball screens as well. Run the off-ball stuff for Diana Taurasi, who can still shoot the absolute leather off the basketball. It's been a fun season for the Phoenix Mercury. So I am glad that you brought that up. Any more shout-outs?
To Connecticut Sun Point, Alyssa Thomas, inverted pick and roll, very tough to deal with.
Yeah, that it is. That it is. And just very quickly on the Fever front, just peeping the schedule as they played, I think, 11 games in 19 days, which is the first time that has happened since 2007. Moving forward, next game is on Friday, June the 7th. Three-day break, they play on the 10th. Three-day break, they play on the 13th. Another three-day break, they play on the 16th. Another three-day break, they play on the 19th. Get a gap there, then they play on the 21st, the 23rd, a four-day break, the 27th, and a three-day break on the 30th. They are finally going to get to rest and also practice and implement some stuff. We should see a little bit more cohesion on both ends of the floor for the Indiana Fever. I'm curious and excited to see what that portion of the program is going to look like. All right, we will leave it there. Otherwise, I will yell, and I do not want to yell on this podcast. So thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link is in the description if you want to watch hoops alongside with us and talk to some awesome folks along the way. Click on that link, create your profile. It is free to make, no shenanigans, especially with a whole lot of hoop being played this week. You might want to tap in, you get some breakdowns along the way. And again, it's just a fun community to be a part of. Got some really cool people in here. We don't just talk hoop, we talk life as well. So if that's your vibe, come rock with us. But beyond that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Bye.